Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Okay.
All right. Well, today we're going to be answering some more questions from you, our listeners. Again, if you have questions for this podcast or the other podcast, feel free to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can also send them into our Discord channel if you are a Patreon supporter. We have a Patreon Q and podcast questions channel set aside specifically for you. You can go ahead and drop those in there. If you are not a Patreon supporter but don't want to do the email thing, you can also drop them into our Q questions channel, which, well, we look there as well. We are going to start out with a first question from our friend Godzilla with a slight warning that there may be some slight spoilers for some things that may be coming in some future publications. So Godzilla says, I have returned again with some recent information regarding the upcoming Folk and Fairy Tales book and how it connects to Shadowlands. Long folk story short, Varisa finds a fragment of Sylvanas' soul in the Maw. Matt has gone on record saying the worst thing we can do to Sylvanas is make her feel again. Could the climax of 9.1 be the reunification of Sylvanas' soul with the weight of all her actions bearing down on her? Could the remainder of Shadowlands be her trying to fix her mess? No. we don't know. But here's the thing. Like, it all depends on time frame. Like, when Folk and Fairy Tales is supposed to happen. So if Varisa finds a fragment of Sylvanas' soul in the Maw, is it after we fought her? Is it after we've already torn through the dungeon raid? Does it actually matter? Is it a piece of her soul beforehand? It really doesn't give us anything to go off of aside from it's a piece of her soul. And if you look at the entirety of Shadowlands, that's not exactly abnormal. Souls are spent and used and done as pieces of experimentations and put together in conglomerations of monstrosities. We see it all throughout the Maw. We've seen it throughout all of Torghast. The entire army of the Jailer is basically a mishmash of souls and anima shoved together in violent experimentation to make, for lack of a better term, clockwork soldiers powered by anima. So finding a fragment of Sylvanas' soul in the Maw, that is not really a statement that means anything yet. There is no context to it. It is simply a statement that it is there. And it could be any number of things. So it's a ripe possibility that, you know, maybe it's after our fight. Maybe it's after we have the encounter with her. Maybe it's a result of her using more power throughout the course of the encounter. Because if you've seen anything with the encounters, they're long. They're drawn out. They're not just a simply we go and punch her once and that's it. She's interacting with us throughout the entirety of that raid setup till we get to her in particular. So who knows? There's also the other aspect of it where for how long has she been brought back from the Shadowlands to the Land of the Living and by her Dark Valkyr, or the Dark Valkyr that are loyal to her or loyal to Helya. Did they put all of her back? Is that insurance policy that somebody has on her? Who knows? Again, it's one of those things where, yes, it's an interesting bit of information, but we have no context. And without any context, it can literally mean anything, or it could also mean nothing. Any thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, I mean, you said the main thing I was thinking is that we really don't know the context, but also, I'm not enthused at the idea of Sylvanas getting to fix her mess. From the beginning of Battle for Azeroth, my biggest fear was that Sylvanas was too popular to pay any consequences for her actions. And I know that the big Sylvanas book is coming out months after this raid. And while I'm looking forward to it, because Christy Golden is an amazing writer, I'm leery of what that means, that there's going to be a big Sylvanas novel releasing in November. Rather, you know what I'm saying? That there's a lot left to Sylvanas' story past this raid encounter. So I don't know what's going to happen in it. I don't know what the ultimate denouement of everything is going to be. It certainly could be something that comes up, but until we see more than just like the story in the fairy tale book, we don't have a lot to go on here. We'll know more as we actually get to test the raid encounter. We'll know more as the story progresses. So that's pretty much all I have on that one.
Yeah. And I mean, and I'm also in the same camp as you are. Like, I like Sylvanas as a character. I've gone on record of saying that, but I don't think that she is a character that deserves to be absolved of all the sins that she's committed in game, essentially, because she's done a lot. And let's be perfectly honest, over the course of all these years, she's done a lot of not very nice things. But she, again, like Matt said, there's this fear that she's too popular to sort of pay whatever price is necessary for it, where other characters have. And I'm hoping that that's not the case. I personally don't want to see her going around trying to fix her messes and whatever she's done and undoing all these things that she's done up to this point. Because to me, it feels like then what's the point of all that happening to begin with? Because that is years and years and years of character development and plans and story and twists and turns. And I think very good character development with Sylvanas in general that then gets erased because, well, it was all just to redeem her. And that's my biggest fear. And I know there's a lot of people out there that want her to have this big redemption arc, but I'm not one of them. I don't think she needs one because I think that if that happens, it sort of invalidates a lot of what she's done, at least over the course of three expansions at this point. And why would you do that? Like, that's the part that I can't reconcile, is I understand wanting your favorite character to have these big moments, but she can still be your favorite character and not be redeemed. And that's the part that I struggle with. So, like, and again, I know that a lot of people out there, and we get this a lot. I get this a lot in direct messages on Discord and Twitter and everything else, where everybody's throwing these theories out of how she's going to be redeemed. But I always respond with the same question. Why does she need to be redeemed? I don't think she does. And again, with her, them finding a piece of her soul, that doesn't mean she's going to be redeemed. That doesn't mean anything. So we'll find out. And I have a feeling that, like Matt pointed out, we're not going to get the full Sylvanas story in game, at least not right now. There's a lot more to it left. So even after we're done with whatever happens in the raid and whatever the outcome there, we have that book that I am very much anticipating from Christy Golden. Christy Golden is a fantastic writer who gives a lot of depth to these characters, and I think that it's a good thing that she's writing this particular story. And I'll call out the Arthas book. The Arthas book was a fantastic look into everything that was happening with Arthas without making him a good guy. It I wouldn't say justified his actions, but it gave you more insight into what he was doing and why he was doing it. It didn't make it better. It didn't make it right. It didn't make the calling of Stratholme suddenly this thing that needs to be celebrated in Azeroth every day as an annual holiday. It just gave you, this is his mindset. This is where he was. These are the things that happened that led him to where he became the Lich King and then beyond. I'm fine if that's what happens here as well. And I've heard a lot of other people talk about that book and how it's going to, you know, justify everything that Sylvanas has done up to this point. It's not always about that. It's just about giving that character more time to basically flush in or fill in all those little gaps that the character development doesn't get a chance to have necessarily in game. And Sylvanas is a very complicated character, and it's okay for her to be very complicated. So I think I've talked about that enough to death. But again, I get what people want to see her redeemed, but I'm definitely not one of them. Anything else before I move on, Matt?
At this rate, people complain that I talk too much will be wrong. So cool.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to the next one. Hello, watchers. I've been thinking very hard about the Ascended Covenant quest Limbo. It's an anima conducted quest in Bastion that has you assess souls as part of the Ascended training or something. You simply hear the circumstances of a soul's death and decide if they should be brought to the Shadowlands by the Kyrian or returned to life. Pick the wrong answer, you get stunned, and do it again. The thing that gets me is the scenario has some strange implications. Sure, a mortal race dying in combat to protect their loved ones, or a goblin dying in a lab accident to try to protect their beloved pets, might show that death comes for us all, but there are others. The elemental spirit that dies in the Firelands, for example. Why does it come up? Isn't it a rule that elementals go back to their plane or whatever? Or the lich that begs for release after so many resurrections? Or the demon who has to go to the Twisting Nether? Why are the Kyrian even judging these things? Don't they follow an entirely different order? There are even several examples of souls being out of the Kyrian Purvoy because they've already heard the call of the Lich King. There's an attendant there to explain to you why the decision is made for each soul, but it sounds like they're explaining rules more than the natural order. It's almost as though the Kyrian are doing little more than enforcing something created. Could this be an early sign that the Shadowlands are fabricated? To what end could that be? Could it possibly be some layer over the true natural order of the universe, collecting souls from where they're supposed to go, like a drain cover trapping hair in the tub? Please speculate wildly. Love the show, and this is Arcee, who is forever a fire mage from Wildhammer. I wouldn't say some oddness to it. Outside of the quest, the Kyrian are just enforcers of whatever rules are already set forth. They don't independently think. That was part of the whole thing that we talked about a long time ago, when specifically we were talking about Bastion and the Covenants and what was going on with that. Matt pointed out that there's, you know, that's why they're still dropping souls into the Maw at that point. It's because they're not taught to independently think like that. They're taught duty. They're taught, here are your rules, go follow them. That's what you do. And I think there's an element of that here in this quest when you have the attendant explaining the decisions and why they're made, because technically they're not the ones making the decision. They're just enforcing the decision that was already made. I think the oddness of it to me is that the quest gives you this idea that the Kyrian have a decision to be made in that process, and that they could sort of not go against, or they could possibly move against the wishes of the Arbiter or whatever was predetermined for whatever reason, which we've seen is basically what makes the Forsworn. So there is a weird implication in that, but other than that, I don't know that it really generally sort of invalidates that, and I think it just basically highlights more so that they're following the directives, right? That I think that's what that shows. What do you think about that part, Matt?
I mean, it's obvious that the Shadowlands seem constructed.
Yeah, we know that.
We talk about the Maw, there's the idea that each of the, I don't want to know what to call them, realms, but each of the Shadowlands seem to be based around the being that's in charge of them. We know that there's to the point where, I can't remember his name, Wow, this is bad. He's one of the big ones. Denathrius.
Mm-hmm.
Denathrius says, I am Revendreth. And he seems to mean it.
Literally, and, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. That's that right off the top. The individual Shadowlands seem to be constructed. There seems to be like an element of these powerful beings arrived and these things were created around them. We know that the first ones are somehow involved. There's the first one's gate in the Maw. So there's a lot of that going on, and we don't know much. We don't know like the specifics of it, but we definitely know that there's Shadowlands appear to be constructed in a way that seems similar to the Titans. It's possible that the Pantheon of Death are similar to the Titans in that they order the places they go to, and that rather than ending up in material, physical, you know, Azeroth plane of existence, they ended up in the Shadowlands where they ordered that instead. We don't know. We don't know exactly what they are. We do know that there's something going on, but I definitely think that's kind of a, you know, there's nothing concrete to go on here. But the Kyrian are definitely, they for most of their existence have just been doing what they're told. The Archon gives them orders and they follow them, and they don't even, it's like nobody bothered to go to the Archon and say, hey, what's, you know, should we still put souls in the Maw since nobody's coming here? Maybe that's that they didn't even really they didn't know what the problem was for an extended period of time. You know, there's no way to know exactly when the Kyrian finally figure out, oh, this is going to the jailer who is behind all our woes. I mean, they don't know anything until you show up.
And even then, they don't believe you right away, right?
Until the Maw Walker shows up, they know nothing. They don't believe you right away, and it's not until you finally get the Archon to listen to you for a few minutes that you actually manage to convey to them, you know, this is how serious this is. So, in terms of who made the Shadowlands, we have no idea. And to what purpose it serves, we don't know. If there even is a natural order of things, that's the thing people keep saying, this doesn't feel like it's part of the natural order of things. What is the natural order of things? Do you know? Has anybody said? It doesn't feel like anybody actually knows what the natural order of things, or even if there is a natural order of things. Because this is the realm of death. It is outside the natural order of things. The natural order of things is back on Azeroth. That's where natural orders happen. There are no natural orders in the Shadowlands. Everything is an unnatural order. By necessity, the place is not natural.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that before the Shadowlands, there was nothing. And all souls just stopped existing. They went into the Shadowlands. And then, who knows? Maybe they went to the in-between where they were devoured. We know the devourers live there. Maybe they just stopped. Maybe all their anima and all their existence just dissipated into nothingness in the void that existed before the Shadowlands was created. I don't know. Before that, you know, did void it seems like void and light existed before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that before a certain point, there was no Shadowlands because there was no death. There might not have been anything there, and it was only the creation of beings that could die that caused the Shadowlands to exist. I don't know. So it's impossible to say, and I think that's something we really need to consider. It's quite possible that there was nothing here before the Shadowlands was put there. And that's why the void attacks it, because they think it's, you know, it's supposed to be void. This isn't supposed to be a place where spirits go and exist. That's not void. Void is nothingness. You're supposed to be nothing. And we're going to keep trying to make it nothing rather than this thing that is something, which is not what it's supposed to be, in their opinion. That's something to consider, that the entire place, the entire plane of the Shadowlands might effectively be an insult to the void. Because it's like a shadow of things that actually exist, and you need light for shadows to be cast. So that's one possibility. I don't know, but I do know that the Shadowlands definitely feel like they were constructed, and that construction might not have been to replace anything. There might not have been anything there to replace.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one way to look at it.
Yeah, and we speculated previously that, you know, Ouroboros might be a new construction or new-ish construction, even in terms of the Shadowlands, in relation to like the Maw and everything else. We've talked about that a lot, but that doesn't necessarily mean that what was before Ouroboros being created, before the Arbiter doing that job, that there wasn't something else that was created prior to that. This could be Shadowlands version 2.0. We don't know. We don't know what existed beforehand. The other thing that I'd like to talk about a little bit is when you're pointing out these different spirits that wind up getting judged by the Kyrian, it's not that they're getting judged by the Kyrian, and it actually does make a lot of sense that these spirits would show up and that the Kyrian would do their job. The elemental spirit that dies in the Firelands and then gets sent before the Kyrian makes sense because it's still a soul. It's comprised of spirit and has to be ferried to a place. Right? It's the same thing with that lich. It's the same thing with that demon. Souls have to transport somewhere. And that's one of the things that they've been very keen to point out, specifically with the Kyrian, is that that's their job. Their job is to ferry the souls to their destination. It doesn't say the Shadowlands. When we were first introduced to the Kyrian, they literally said ferrying souls to their final destination. So what does that mean? That means that if you're not going to the Shadowlands, if you're not being categorized into one of those realms, or if you're not a soul that can be touched or harvested, in the case of, let's say, an elemental spirit, or a lich that's already made its deal and is sort of outside of that, those rules are in place that basically they're not judging. They're reading off and saying, okay, this is user 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They go back to this point. And they take that soul, they take it over to that point, and they shove it back to where it needs to go. If you do the Queen's Conservatory and you actually spend time doing it, while you are sending back spirits and Loa and gods to wherever they're going from, that's pretty much exactly what you're doing, is taking that spirit that's been healed and shoving it back where it needs to go. It's not harvested. It's not used to power anything. It's not repurposed. It's not reborn into anything in the Shadowlands. It's just there to heal long enough for it to be fully capable of going back. And then it goes back and it shoves through a portal. Kyrian basically are wind up doing the same thing, except these souls don't need to be healed. They basically just need to go back to where they go, whether it's the elemental plane of fire, whether it's lich goes back to their phylactery, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but I don't care. That, I think, makes perfect sense. I think that's the angle that you need to look at that from. Is it, again, these races dying, these races or beings, these entities going into this transient state are just being ferried back to where they need to go.
One thing that occurs to me to point out, in the case of the fire elemental, elementals go back to their plane if they die on Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
But you said it died in the Firelands.
That's what they said.
If it dies in the Firelands, then it dies. That's how we killed Ragnaros. Remember, we went to the Firelands and killed him?
Yeah.
See, elementals die in the Firelands or any other elemental plane. They die. That's why the elemental planes exist. They just survive if they die on Azeroth because of the binding that has locked them into the elemental planes. They are driven back. But you kill one in the Firelands, like Ragnaros again, and they die. That is why it was a big deal to go into the Firelands and fight Ragnaros. If he was just going to come back, there was no point to doing it. It was only because it was there. So, an elemental that died in the Firelands absolutely does die.
Well, fair
enough. And we know there are elements in the Shadowlands, and we know there are elementals in the Shadowlands. We have seen them.
That's true, and that way it would explain why we can see them, because we did talk about the Earth guys chilling around in Bastion. There's fire elementals running around the place. I haven't seen any air elementals, but I'm sure they're there. But
so, yeah, elementals can die. They just have to die on the elemental planes.
Yeah, so then it even makes more sense. Maybe they have...
As for demons... That's an interesting thing to consider, because demons, we have always heard before that they return to the Fell. But then we had Antorus, and we're not sure how the mechanism of them returning to the Fell actually functions. Just because they go back to the Fell doesn't mean they don't go through the Shadowlands to get there. that's
And if the fell, or if that mechanism even still exists now that we've sort of kinda took care of the whole Titan soul that was being used to fuel the engine.
Yeah, but that doesn't. The Chronicle basically talks about how demons would come back well before Sargeras did anything.
Sure.
So it's possible that the old system, which let them come back, but it was the way Antorus worked, it was guided, it was controlled. It meant that if you wanted somebody back right now, you could just pull them back. And that's how they got Varimothras to torture. He got killed. They pulled him right back out of Antorus and began torturing him. But with that gone, they might be resurrecting the old way, which was unpredictable because it was chaotic, because they're demons.
But, they still have to get to that point. They still die, you know, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like everything Sargeras did was imposing order on something chaotic. Again, that's what Titans do. They impose order. Even cracked and insane, he still imposed order on something chaotic. He created a legion out of a mob.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what they were before. They were just a mob. They were like, you know, every demon was out for itself. And he made them march in order. But now that he's not doing that, there's no order. There's no legion. There's just various demons, each out for themselves again, which might be what they're doing now in terms of resurrecting. They just resurrect as they can. They go back to the fell as they can, and they might travel through the Shadowlands to do it, because it certainly seems to be a way station for everything that dies. That's something we can't really speak to, but it is possible at least.
Yeah. And I mean, who knows? We're probably going to find out some more information about that with things that are coming in the future anyway. And we say this a lot because, well, it's a true statement. But with Korthia coming out, with a lot of the stuff that's going to be revealed there, and possibly throughout the course of the entire rest of the expansion, because we still have a whole lot of expansion to go, folks. We are not nearing the end of it at all.
This is the first major patch.
This is the first major patch. And how many did the Legion and Battle for Azeroth have?
At least up to a 0.3 patch. The only expansion in the past few years to not go up to a 0.3 was Warlords of Draenor, mm-hmm. which went to a 0.2. So even if this one's short like Warlords of Draenor, and I don't think it is, there was still a patch, you know, a 0.1 and a 0.32 patch. So we'll at least get one more major patch after this, and I expect we will get two more at the least. And it might go longer. We don't know.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree, and because again, this is one of those things where we've talked about this before too, and this is maybe something we'll talk more about, or possibly on the other podcast. Is this has the potential to use those major updates to continue a longer story, maybe more so than the other ones have done in the past. Not necessarily because there's just more story, but because the opportunity is there. And I think it's going to depend on how well this first big patch does and then the frequency therein as it moves forward, right? Long-term storytelling is definitely on their mindset and has been since Legion. Legion, Battle for Azeroth have proven that they're looking at longer-term story as opposed to some of the other expansions where things were a little more bite-sized and could probably, you know, break it down just a little bit more. Like Warlords of Draenor, as big as that story was really well self-contained because, well, it's an alternate universe that kind of tangentially ties into what we're dealing with on the main timeline, so it doesn't have to go much further than that to get where we need to go. But now we're in a territory where maybe it will be longer. Maybe there's going to be more that they can tell. Maybe more content patches will lead us to different places before we even get to another expansion. But I think Matt's right. And I think we're going to get some major story updates throughout the course of this. And even don't forget the minor ones, the smaller content releases that have been done in the past, especially with Legion and with Battle for Azeroth, still had plenty of new story that they're told. And that doesn't mean that there couldn't be a 9.1.5 that has a major update for story, and then maybe a 9.2 and a 9.2.5. They've done that in the past. There's more for us to uncover. So, but I think we can move on from that one. Next one. Greetings, Overlords of Lore. Back at the end of April, you reminded us that we still don't know what Azeroth is the Titan of. But what if we do? but have just missed it. Before I touch on the Trail of Breadcrumbs, I think it's important to do a quick reminder that the writers of the story have always embraced influences from Norse mythology. So my Trail of Breadcrumbs, first, the pantheon states that Azeroth is the last of us. Sargeras is the warrior, the protector. Sargeras is obsessed with Azeroth. Zolval wants Azeroth, making him the only first one so far to want to transcend into the pantheon of life. The Winter Queen, only referring to Lulun as her sister, merely acknowledges not attempting to transcend. I may have missed it, but why is the Titan Forge in the heart named Mother? Now for the Norse connection. Sargeras, with his flaming sword and cleaving the worlds, besides being a father figure, has illusions of Surtur. Between the Void and Sargeras, it would seem that the universe is doomed to die in cosmic flame, much like Ragnarok. But from the flames, some gods will continue to go on. So is it that Azeroth is the Titan Mother? Is that why Sargeras is obsessed with her? Because as the ultimate protector, his is the father figure, which would be why Zolval wishes to transcend and claim his prize. To the Norse gods, visions of Ragnarok were ignored until it was too late. Could this be what Sylvanas has been privy to and why she now moves to see the world reborn? Sorry, a lot of Norse mythology is far rustier than those of Blizzard, but the trail has led me here, and I bet there are some clues I'm missing along the way. And this is from Azimuth, the humble Nightborn hunter. I think you're more up-to-date on Norse than I am.
The heart. Yeah, Mother wasn't from the Heart Chamber.
Correct.
She moved to the Heart Chamber, but she wasn't originally there. She was up at the Aldir? Is that what it's called? I can't remember the raid.
Aldir, yeah.
Yeah, she was up at Aldir. Norse mythology certainly is one of the world mythologies that the Titans, at least the Titan Forge, draw on, as is, you know, there's others. Some of them look very Greek. Clearly the ones in Pandaria touch upon various Chinese and other Asian mythologies. But I don't think, I think you're, you know, it's fine to like be aware of Norse mythology and so forth. I don't think that they reacted too late to Ragnarok. I think they didn't react to Ragnarok because they knew it was impossible to do anything, because in Norse religious thought, there is predestination. You don't have a choice. There's nothing you can do. It's like in the Greek plays, you couldn't, you know, it was an act of hubris to attempt to escape a prophecy. If someone made a prophecy, it was going to happen. And if you tried to evade it, it would just happen anyway. For example, Perseus's grandfather was told that if his daughter Danae had a son, that son would kill him. So he locked her away to keep anyone from you know, getting her pregnant. So Zeus came in as a shower of gold and got her pregnant anyway. So he was like, well, then I'm going to have to kill her. So he stuck her in a little coffer and stuck her out in the ocean. And instead of dying, she was found by a fisherman, and her son, you know, grew up with the fisherman. And in the end, Perseus killed him, not on purpose, during like an athletic thing. It was a shot put. But yeah, he killed him. And thus the prophecy was fulfilled. You couldn't escape it. True prophecy was not escapable. In Norse mythology, everything was dead. The Norns had spun out the fates of all men.
Yeah, gods. The Skyne witches had taken care of that. Like that was already predetermined.
There was nothing to be done. It was all going to happen. That's why they didn't just kill Loki the first time he began acting up, because there was no point to it. You wouldn't succeed, and it wouldn't change anything. It's one of the things that was a big part of why Norse cultures were considered to be like almost suicidally brave, because they didn't care. It's like, well, if I'm going to die now, I'm going to die now. There's nothing I can do about it. So I might as well go do what I was going to do. Because, you know, if it's my time, then I'm gone. And if it's not my time, then nothing can kill me. And that's the way the entirety of Norse mythology works. Odin knew it was coming. He knew how he'd die. He knew he could do some things to prolong his existence, like they could bind the Fenris wolf and it would take longer for Ragnarok to happen, but it was still going to happen. It was the wolf was still going to kill Odin. They even knew that Odin's like son was going to kill the wolf, Vidar. The whole thing, you know, it was all known. Everybody knew how they were going to die. So it's not, I don't think WoW goes with that you know, the whole thing of WoW and that kind of thing is we've seen heroes actually rise up against these kind of things. There's that whole bit where Algolon says, how can you persevere against all cosmically calculated odds? But they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the whole thing, is we do things that are not possible. We do things that, there's a part when you destroy Argus, it's like, there's this quest text that's basically like, this isn't possible. This shouldn't have happened, but you have defeated a Titan.
Not defeated, killed.
Yeah, you have killed a Titan, and that's not possible, and you did it.
Like, keep in mind, even at this point, like, we've gone through that raid, Sargeras, who, quote-unquote, killed the Pantheon, has all their souls. They're still there. They exist. They're not gone. They're just different, right?
Yeah, their souls escape their bodies and you try to inhabit new ones. So, that's not... A big part of World of Warcraft is that idea that you can defy fate. You can stand up and oppose it, which is not part of Norse mythology. So I don't think, while I think you could certainly look at this and say, that's interesting. It's interesting that one of them is called Mother. It might be the role. If there's going to be a reincarnation cycle, that's at least feasible. But we don't know. And we don't know what Azeroth's role is. It certainly could end up that Azeroth has to essentially reseed all the worlds that the Legion burned. That's entirely possible. But maybe it's something else. We just don't know. But I do think it's dangerous to look too closely at any particular world mythology and assume that it is the way Warcraft works. Because Warcraft tends to oppose it. It tends to... The entire ultimate story of World of Warcraft is about how you can... How does Illidan put it? Sometimes the hand of fate must be forced.
Yeah.
Like, Illidan's fate was to be chosen by the light and become a vessel for it. He was born with glowing golden eyes that told him that that was his destiny. From the get-go, his destiny was to go through everything he did and become a servant of the light. And he didn't. And remember, Ashara had the golden eyes too. And she clearly didn't. There's an old thing that Velen once said, that the light, you know, the light doesn't abandon the people that believe in it, that choose to serve it, but it does not operate unopposed. All these forces conflict and clash. None of them have dominion, so there's no way any of them can ultimately be destined to happen. The whole point is that they are in flux. They are in opposition. There's a struggle, and as insignificant as mortals may seem, mortals can tip the balance. Mortals can make decisions. They can choose their own fate. Then the future will come based on those decisions. It's not, there's no fate but what we make, to quote another source.
Although I think that's... go ahead, sorry.
No, you said something, go for it.
I was going to say, although I think that's fascinating that that seems to be something that's very mortal-centric inside of the Warcraft universe. Mortals can do that, for the lack of a better term, more than I think cosmic beings are believed to be able to do those things. Like, I keep coming back to the idea that the Pantheon, the Titans themselves, are beings of order. And they set things in the way that they should be to move along a track to get to a point that they think already should exist. And to a certain degree, I think that's been proven that when things don't go that way, in case of like us fighting against the Constellars, that it's a surprise. It's not how things are supposed to happen. It's not what was planned. And to a certain point, I think there might be a tinge of sort of like that fatalism with when it comes to... the Titans themselves, right? And I'm wondering, I keep going back to this Last of Us thing, this Azeroth being the Last of Us thing. There's another possibility that isn't the mother of the Pantheon, because I think Amon-Thul was considered the father of the Pantheon, not Sargeras. What if it was just meant that Azeroth being the Last of Us is literally that, the last Titan that would potentially be active in the universe? Because if you think about it, unlike the other Titans, maybe she doesn't have one specificity. Maybe she doesn't have one area that she, you know, rules over or is domain over more so than the others. Maybe she, and I brought this up a couple weeks ago, she, with the building of the facilities like they were done after Yashiraz was ripped out of her, after they tried to repair her shell or her egg, whatever you want to call it, to feed that spirit back into her, it wasn't just one thing doing that. It was all of the Titans giving a piece of their expertise or a piece of themselves as an investiture into Azeroth. That's why ANR has, you know, for lack of a better term, I'm just going to call them minions, doing what they're doing, cultivating those lives. That's why there's the Bronze Dragonflight trying to keep the time pathways free and clear, specifically on Azeroth. What if that was always what it was meant to be, is that the time of those Titans, to a certain degree, was always meant to come to an end? And we're at that point, and the only one that hadn't done that, that was trying to rail against that, was Sargeras. And he didn't even realize. And at the end, shoving that giant sword into her was passing that torch. And somebody brought this question up about what would happen if Azeroth woke up, ripped out that sword, and decided to become, you know, the protector of the universe, or whatever the case was. I'm paraphrasing. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your question that you asked a few weeks ago. But maybe that's not too far off. Maybe at the end of this, the intention was that Azeroth would become better than the individual pieces of the Pantheon and be more complete. Like, maybe their reaction to spirit, their connection with Alun, which seems to be ever present on Azeroth, to maybe, we don't know what level it is compared to the other worlds that Alun can touch, but there seems to be a lot of it that all seems to tie together. And maybe Azeroth was always meant to be, for lack of a better term, the Voltron of the Titans, and to stand up and have pieces of all of them to do everything that they could do, but with a better understanding, because maybe that's how you fight the void. The void is nothing, but the Pantheon themselves are all, they're not opposed to each other, but they all seem to have their specialty that, again, that's what they do. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's somebody who stands up that has a pieces of all of them, that is the sum of all those parts, that is the sum of creation, the sum of the universe, and all its various aspects, and that's how you fight the void. Maybe. Don't know. I don't think it has anything to do with Sargeras being the father figure, because, again, I don't think he's very much a father figure. The only wild card is Zoval, right? And we still have no idea why he wants Azeroth. No idea whatsoever. And I think that's the wild card, right? Why would Zoval, why would the jailer want Azeroth? And that's a question I don't have an answer to yet. And I don't think Matt does either. And I don't even think we have anything close to speculation. So, and like you've pointed out, Matt, there's tons of Norse connection when it comes to the mythology as far as what is drawn upon with the Azerothian or just World of Warcraft mythos in general. But it does seem like it borrows from a whole lot of other cultures as well. So who knows? And maybe there is some form of fatalism in there. Maybe there isn't. But I think we're going to find out a little bit more as we find out what the reason is behind Zoval wanting Azeroth, which we'll probably start getting an idea of next patch drop. So, anything else you want to add to that one?
No.
Okay. Our next, or I think this might be our last question we have here. Dearest Lore Watchers, just finished a Forsaken in WoW Classic. I only did this to play with my 16-year-old son, who refuses to see the error of his ways and join the Righteous Alliance. The following thought crossed my mind. What do the discoveries and revelations of the Shadowlands mean for this Forsaken? This is from Starhammer, Knight of the Silver Hand, and Son of Ironforge. That's a loaded question, just because it's very open-ended. I don't know if we understand completely what the Shadowlands means for the Forsaken. Up until recently, I hadn't seen a whole lot of Forsaken souls in, like, Torghast or the Maw, but recently I've seen a ton of them. So they very clearly can go there. They very clearly can exist in whatever spirit form, like elves and gnomes and everybody else can. So there's definitely something there. But I don't know if it really changes their perspective as far as anything else goes compared to any of the other living races.
I feel like that's kind of ignoring something.
Okay, go for it.
Forsaken wouldn't exist without the Shadowlands. They wouldn't exist without the Jailer.
That's true.
They wouldn't exist without the Rune Carver and the weapons that he made, the helmet and the sword, the Helm of Domination and Frostmourne, that were used by the Lich King to create the Plague of Undeath. The power of that is what was powering the Lich King, and he used that to create the Plague of Undeath that created the Forsaken. So they wouldn't exist at all without the Jailer. The Jailer created the Forsaken, ultimately. He also created the Scourge. So it's not like, you know, he created both the Scourge and the Forsaken, because the Forsaken are just... The original Forsaken are just ex-Scourge who got their will back. The domination effect was bleeding out because the Frozen Throne had a huge hole in it that he'd used to shove the sword through in order to get it to Arthas, in order, as part of his plan to escape from the Legion's control. As a result of that, the domination effect of the Helm of Domination faded, and they got their will back, and then after that, he couldn't just reclaim them, because there were too many of them, and he had to marshal his power. That's something to consider. It doesn't necessarily... Like, we don't know what that means, but we know that it's true, that the Jailer is ultimately the creator of the Forsaken. Why it is that Forsaken... It's like... You wonder, should the Forsaken souls have already been in the Shadowlands? Like, because they died. Like, that's something to consider. If they do actually have souls that can go there, are those the original souls of those bodies? Or, so, when you're Forsaken, is your mortal soul stuck in your corpse? Is that what your existence is? And it changes you so thoroughly that when that corpse dies, the soul that goes to the Shadowlands identifies more with the corpse that it was in than its original living body? I don't know. We know that souls can be fragmented.
Yep, we've learned that because of Uther.
And that's the power of Frostmourne again, which is one of the things that was used to create the original Scourge in Forsaken.
And technically we know that because liches exist, and they even exist inside of the Shadowlands and in Maldraxxus, which technically have fragmented their souls.
So it's possible that the souls that go down from Forsaken are just pieces of the original souls that were in those bodies. There's a lot to this, and we keep saying this because there's not a lot to go on. No one has stopped and said, this means X for the Forsaken. So you kind of have to look at what you do have and speculate on what it means. We know that the Shadowlands have been reaching out, trying to escape. Solal's been trying to escape them all for a while. We know that the Forsaken and the Scourge were created as part of that attempt. The original Lich King was intended as part of his plan. And then that Lich King, of course, you know, say what you want about Ner'zhul, but he wasn't interested in being anybody's patsy.
Even close.
Just like he escaped from Kil'jaeden, he definitely seemed to be plotting his escape from Zoval, to the point where he's showing up in the raid, and Zoval is clearly not happy with him, based on what we see of him in the raid that's coming. Arthas is much the same. Arthas was not interested in serving anyone. So, there's definitely a connection, and there's definitely... Without the Shadowlands having existed in the first place, people would just die and they wouldn't come back. The Kyrian sending souls back to our realm is the result of them going to the Shadowlands and then the Kyrian being like, nope, go back. The thing with the Forsaken, their spirits, however it works, the power of the Maw is what was used to raise them. The necromantic energy that, you know, that raised them up is based on those runes on that blade. And the rune work on that helmet. It's based on the power of the Jailer working through those items. So that's something that if I were a Forsaken, I'd probably switch my hatred to the Jailer.
Yeah.
Because it's ultimately his fault. All of this is his fault. But in another way, what the second shot at existence you got is from the Jailer. So I don't know. But definitely that connection is there.
There's also another wild card that I think nobody's really talked about as far as Forsaken go with the Shadowlands. And that's still Kalia Menethil. Like, her being what she is and able to go to the Shadowlands didn't go through the Maw, mind you, which, like, the other ones did. So that's another oddity. But shows up in Ouroboros, is observing what's going on, has seen all of this that's going on, is supposed to be advising the Forsaken. How does that information get filtered down to them, too? Right? Like, the average Forsaken probably doesn't know the full extent of the runic stuff quite yet. Maybe. We don't know, because it hasn't really been discussed. But how does that news being filtered down, theoretically through Kalia, to the rest of the Forsaken, how does that alter their perception? And I think Matt's onto something. I think that they shift their hatred a little bit. I think that it becomes more of, this is the reason we exist, but I think you make a really good point. This is the reason we exist still. This is our second chance at doing something. Because for all the bad that has happened at the hands of some of the Forsaken, the Wrathgate and the plagues that they tried to redo, and the ones that were incredibly loyal to Sylvanas' darker plans, there are still those that are heroes, right? There are those that maybe in life weren't soldiers. Maybe in life they weren't, generals or people that would normally be combatants. Maybe they were bakers. Maybe they were stable hands. Who knows? But their second chance at life, the second chance at existence, gave them the opportunity to be something different. They got a chance to potentially reinvent themselves. And that's a gift and a curse at the same time. And how many of those Forsaken were instrumental in defeating whatever problems or these major catastrophes that have plagued Azeroth since for the last 16 years. You know, it's easy to write them off as just undead monstrosities that used to live in Undercity, but they're not. They're a people. They are a race that exists, that have feelings. When we talk about books, read Before the Storm. They're complicated. Their existence is complicated. And it's that they run the same gamut of emotions, maybe amped up a little bit too in some certain cases, that humans do. They still miss their family. They still want to exist and do well. They want to protect those that they love. And yeah, that second chance to do that matters. So it's Forsaken are always a fascinating just entity in general, because they're so complicated, and it's not in a bad way. It's just everything about them, this expansion, is getting more complicated on top of what has already happened to them. And we don't know how that's going to shake out. And I think you make an interesting point too. And we've talked about this before. We don't know if their souls have been fragmented. We don't know if multiple pieces of, you know, Eddie the Forsaken exists in two different places at the same time, where the one that is actually now in that Forsaken body is a little shard of soul that grew up into a different entity while the other part of it exists in the Shadowlands somewhere. We haven't encountered that yet. And I actually think that would be something really interesting if they would actually explore. And I actually want them to explore more the Forsaken in the Shadowlands and what it means. Because if any time we're going to get more Forsaken lore or story, this is the perfect opportunity to do it. And while we have gotten some with Zoval, we have gotten some with everything that happened or is happening with the Helm of Domination and Frostmourne and the story behind that, there's still more that you can do with it and what it means to the individual Forsaken soldier or person or citizen, because there are those that don't fight, right? There are those that still try to maintain a society, for lack of a better term. So it's a deceptively complicated question for Forsaken. And I don't really know where they're going to go with it. But I really do hope that we have one of those experiences where we can hear some conversation about what the Shadowlands means for the Forsaken, what all these revelations mean for the Forsaken, and how it colors their perception, and how it changes or doesn't change how they interact with the living, or truly living, I don't know how you'd call it, or how it changes how they accept Kalia Menethil, because that's, again, still a wild card. And she says that she doesn't want to lead them, but she's going to advise them. At some point, the writing's on the wall. She's going to wind up leading the Forsaken. It's almost inevitable, right? So, I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff that they could do with that, and I'm really, really hopeful that in the coming patches, we get some Forsaken-centric story and revelations to further explain what they're thinking, what they're going through, and what everything means. Anything else you want to add to that one, Matt?
Oh, not really, no.
Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. For those, the listeners at Blizzard Watch, Audible is offering free audiobook download with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This is a perfect opportunity for you to go ahead and check out Before the Storm, Shadows Rising, or the Arthas novel, or the Illidan novel, before we get to the Sylvanas novel in November. Great opportunity to do that, see what we talk about with the characterization, see what we talk about the story developments from some very fantastic writers. You can download many of Blizzard's titles, as well as thousands of others, at blizzardwatch.com/audible. And again, if you do have questions for this show or the other one, please be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com, or you can send them into one of our multiple Discord channels. One thing I would like people to do, and I would like some more of this, we haven't had any in a while, is I would like some ideas if there's a particular theme or topic that you'd like us to discuss in depth. Answering questions is great, but I'd also like to see what type of content would you like us to revolve an entire episode around. And be sure to send those in as well to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.